This is the last day of this January 2012 Rohatsu Sesshin, 7-day Sesshin. And today we're going to take up another koan, this one in the Mumonkan, or the gateless barrier, or the gateless gate. And this one's called, and that's number 9, Daitsu Chisho Buddha. The case. Once a monk asked Master Seijo of Koyo, Daitsu Chisho Buddha did zazen on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas, but could neither manifest the Dharma nor attain Buddhahood. Why was this? Seijo said, your question is exactly to the point. The monk persisted. Why did he not attain Buddhahood by doing zazen on the Bodhi seat? Seijo replied, because he didn't attain Buddhahood. This is a master, this Seijo of Koyo, is one who we don't know anything about except he lived around the 10th century. There's nothing in the records about him. Imagine someone of enough stature to be in a koan like this, for whom all trace of biography has been lost. Think of how many others there are. 10 times this number, 100 times this number, who've also been lost in history. Masters who toiled their whole lives going to sesshin after sesshin, hundreds of sesshins perhaps, bringing students to enlightenment, devoting their whole lives to the Dharma. What happened to them? Where else could they be but right here? This Daitsu Chisho Buddha appears in the Lotus Sutra, chapter 7 of the Lotus Sutra. Daitsu Chisho means supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom. So this is the Buddha of supremely pervading, passing wisdom, surpassing wisdom. As with most koans, we don't know the context, the backstory for this monk's question. At least I don't. Haven't found any backstory. But if I were to try to fill it in using my imagination, I would see this monk having himself gone to many sesshins, having devoted himself to daily discipline, daily sitting, as a monk perhaps of clear aspiration, knowing that the way to truly help others is to come to awakening. And this was his goal, to come to awakening for the sake of all beings, not just for himself, but to purify his heart and mind, to eliminate the egoistic contamination and be able to selflessly devote himself to helping others. He may have given himself a break one day and spent some time in the library of the monastery, pulled a volume off the shelf, happened to be the Lotus Sutra. And what does he run into but this story? Daitsu Chisho Buddha did Zazen on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas, but could neither manifest the Dharma nor attain Buddhahood. What? You could see him saying, well, let me reread that. You could see him. You could see him putting the book down in his lap and blinking in confusion. How can this be? A kalpa is this immense measure of time. There are different descriptions of it. In India, they love to give a discrete, particular form to infinitely long periods of time and space. So we have here a couple of, well, there. Let's just use one here. There's said to be minor, medium, and major kalpas. A minor kalpa is the period of time described as the of what it would take to empty a container of poppy seeds that is a mile wide, a mile long, and a mile high, wait for it, by removing a single poppy seed every 3 years. You know, there's something, these immense numbers, we're not equipped, we're not neurologically equipped to grasp the immensity of huge numbers. We hear these numbers tossed around all the time in terms of the budget, the national budget and the national debt and so forth, billions and trillions and... What do we do with that? That's just... Once I read that a billion is the number of times it would take a propeller of a plane that's rotating at 2,500 revolutions per minute, the amount of time it would take for that to be running for a year. It made it a little more understandable when you get some concreteness into it instead of just pure abstraction, just pure symbols, letters and numbers, billion, trillion. So this Buddha, and by the way, what's he doing Zazen for anyway if he's the Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom? Well, that's not so hard to understand. Anyone who has confirmed our basic enlightened nature and can therefore appreciate can access this ineffable nature of mind, would want to be there all the time. And the best way to do that is to do Zazen. sitting zazen is the best way to reach this realm of no mind, this realm of the unborn, as Bankei said. It's delicious. It's sublime when we have seen the formlessness of form, when we've seen the formlessness of all of this mental phenomena that earlier caused us so much misery, to have seen the emptiness of that is to be released from the binding quality of it. What a wonderful thing to return again and again to that realm of bright purity. And in doing that, to connect with all of the 10 directions, 3 worlds, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all beings, sentient and insentient, to be with the entire universe at that moment. Why would even a great Buddha not want to do zazen? Of course, a great Buddha is doing zazen all the time, not just while sitting, but there's nothing like sitting. The timeless realm of samadhi. Who among those who have tasted this even for a scant moment would not want to return to that realm? It's in the Mumon Kan, Zen Master Mumon, in one of the verses says, this one instant is an infinite number of kalpas, an infinite number of kalpas at the same time, this one instant. No time. In a commentary by the late Robert Aitken Roshi, he quotes Linchi, Rinzai, commenting on this sentence that this Buddha did zazen on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas. This is what Linchi said, that sitting on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas refers to the practice of the 10 paramitas. Again, Linchi, just what the 10 paramitas are, 10 ways of perfecting oneself as a human being. The 10 paramitas are, well, we know the first 6 are more commonly mentioned, generosity or dana, morality, forbearance, vigor or zeal, meditation and wisdom. Those are the first 6. And then sometimes another 4 are mentioned. Conduct and speech appropriate to the truth, resolve or will, strength, and spiritual knowledge. Linchi is suggesting that Zen practice is not just sitting, but broadening our mind of stabilized awareness and responsiveness and to extend everything we do throughout our waking hours every minute. Linshi also said, the Dharma of the Buddha did not manifest itself means that the Buddha is in essence not born and the Dharma does not pass away. Okay, Bankei would agree. So this monk reads this, and it's all he can do to wait until morning Doksan, and he goes before this Master Seijo, and he asks, why was this? Why could he neither manifest the Dharma nor attain Buddhahood? Why? Why? The word why appears in a number of koans. Why has inspired scientific research, medical and other scientific research, for forever, and can yield great benefits. But for ultimate matters, where does why get us? It's a question that invites thoughts. It's a question that separates us from what is. Why do we have to do outdoor keening when it's freezing cold out? When I was a teenager, I went through a period where I said, why do I have to make my bed every morning when I'm just going to use it again in that night? Teenagers are full of those questions, and younger children. It's always the discriminating mind just having a field day. Why? So why did this great Buddha not attain Buddhahood? Linshi says, he did not attain Buddhahood means the Buddha cannot become Buddha again. Of course, the great paradox right at the center of Zen practice is if we all from the very beginning Buddhas, why is it that we need to work so hard to realizing this? This was Zen Master Dogen's burning question, his natural koan as a monk. Why, if we already are innately endowed with this Buddha nature, this unborn Buddha mind, why do we have to devote ourselves to usually years of training, practice and training? Why are we even prompted to do so if we're already Buddhas? How come we don't know that we're Buddhas? Dogen also said, Zen teaches that all things are Buddha. Practicing the way of the Buddha means having faith in the Buddha way. Having faith in the Buddha way means you first must have faith that you originally abide in the way, are not deluded, are not mistaken, that you neither gain nor lose in Buddha wisdom, and are not in error. If you arouse this kind of faith, illuminate the way in this manner, and rely on it and practice it, it is the basis for enlightenment. A certain Chinese practitioner by the name of Pei Xu, who's actually a prime minister of China in ancient times, put it this way: an ordinary person is someone who is enlightened the whole day long without knowing it. Or, more simply put, it is wisdom that is seeking wisdom. If you must objectify enlightenment as this thing that we have to get to, then consider this. If you're rushing for it so diligently, trying to catch up to it, consider, how do you know it's ahead of you? How do you know if you must make it into an object, how do you know it's not behind you? And that if you would just stop, it'd catch up to you. Stop. Settle down. Let the mind settle. Dive deep into the depths of this mind. This mu. Why was this? The monk said. Seijo turns it back to him. Your question is exactly to the point. Surely Seijo didn't think that that would satisfy him. And sure enough, the monk persisted. Why did he not attain Buddhahood by doing Zazen in the Bodhi seat? This was something that was really chewing at this monk. He had to persist. He had no choice. And then Seijo replied, because he didn't attain Buddhahood. I think many people can get the gist of this koan. It's possibly... Oh, it's probably one of the dozen or so easiest koans. But realizing the point of the koan, truly realizing it, it's not so easy. If there's People sometimes ask or wonder, if they don't ask, they wonder, what is it that I'm going to get from enlightenment? Well, the truth is, you're not going to get anything because you don't need anything. But through awakening, this much you'll see. If it's genuine awakening, you'll see that everyone is equally endowed with this enlightened nature. You'll see, in other words, that there's nothing to get. and that you've gotten nothing, that you've attained nothing, that all we can do in practice is lose what is not essential to us, to lose what we don't need, what in fact gets in the way of our functioning as enlightened beings all the time. And that Zazen is itself the manifestation of our Buddha nature. We only sit because we already have this true nature. The sitting is the functioning of this true nature. The sitting is the evidence that our true nature, our enlightened true nature, is well, vital, and moving toward the inevitable. The inevitable, if not in this sesshin, then later in this lifetime. If not in this lifetime, then the next lifetime. Now the little shadow that falls across this koan and this whole teaching is that if one just convinces oneself intellectually, conceptually, that all right, if we're all enlightened, then why do anything? You know, that is, I don't know that I've ever encountered that in anyone in all my years of practice and teaching. I've never heard anyone take that stand and say, all right, we're all enlightened from the very beginning, then I'm just going to take it easy and enjoy my innate Buddhahood. But in it seems from the stories, the koans, and that in ancient China, in Japan, Korea, no doubt, that this was something seriously done. It's called, Yasutani Roshi describes this in the Three Pillars of Zen, it's called Buji Zen. In Japan, it's called Buji Zen. It's a crippling mistake. Because, of course, it forecloses the possibility of realizing for oneself, of embodying this nature of ours, this pure, luminous, whole and complete Buddha nature. Go on to Mumon's commentary. I approve the old barbarian's realization, but I don't approve his understanding. If an ordinary person realizes, he is a sage. If a sage understands, he is an ordinary person. Well, here Mumon is playing with these two words, understanding and realization, and asking us to be clear about distinguishing between the two. Often we use the word understanding as a synonym, the same thing as realization. But Mumon is not doing that here. And his purpose is an important one. The old barbarian, we normally that refers to Bodhidharma, but really it can mean, in a much wider sense, it can mean anyone, any person, any practitioner. Realization, yes, good. Understanding, not so much. If a sage understands, he's an ordinary man. If an ordinary person realizes, he is a sage. They have a saying in the Zen tradition, 1 minute of sitting is 1 minute of being a Buddha. Sitting, of course, means not just sitting and sifting through thoughts in one's mind, but sitting with an empty mind. 1 minute of sitting, 1 minute of Buddha. There's a story, I don't know where it comes from, but it's about a freighter, huge freighter that was limped through a bad storm near the coast of South America. Its water kegs were smashed and the crew was growing more and more desperate with thirst. And this freighter came upon another vessel, and the captain on the freighter signaled a plea for water. And to his surprise, what came back from the other vessel was this message: let down your buckets. And he did so, and he found that the water was fresh. It was fresh seawater. Although he'd been out of sight of land, the ship was off the mouth of the Amazon River, where the water was fresh for many miles. Let down your buckets. In this sesshin and in many sesshins, I urge people to trust the process. And that's in order to get free of standing apart from the process and trying to chart it, or as I said earlier this week, trying to measure one's progress or lack of progress. As long as we're doing that, we're going to be impeded. We have to become the process, not stand apart from it and try to evaluate it. It's a fundamental mandate in Zen practice. Be it. Don't try to chart it. And now the verse, Mumon's verse. Rather than giving the body relief, give relief to the mind. When the mind is at peace, the body is not distressed. If body and mind are both set free, why would a holy hermit seek to become a lord? This is good advice, this first line. Rather than giving the body relief, give relief to the mind. Body here, and always, in all contexts, body means body-mind. We can't tease apart mind and body. Body partakes of mind, mind partakes of body. Roshi Kapla used to say, body is the material aspect of mind, mind is the immaterial aspect of body. Some people can spend years and years involved with this mind-body complex in terms of diet or posture and this and that, endlessly working through their issues with this self. That's what it is, the self. Mind-body, body-mind. Mumon says, rather than doing all that, give relief to the mind. The mind. Moo. What? Who? mind is at peace, the body is not distressed. We learn this in sesshin sooner or later, if we go to enough of them, that with our physical pain in the zendo, once we can finally stop fussing with our cushions and our posture and thinking about everything, if we just plunge into the practice, we can find that we're free of the body. It doesn't mean pain entirely disappearing, no, but it means that it's no longer the problem that it was. That's giving relief to the mind rather than to the body. It's using our true mind to put in place this feverish clod of ailments and grievances, as George Bernard Shaw put it. Body and mind are both set free. Why would a holy hermit seek to become a lord? Like one in water crying, I thirst. Like a child of rich birth wandering poor on this earth. Time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows.